I want to tell you a story. And it starts with the last church I was in. It was a rough beginning. but that's what you hired a youth pastor like me for. It was my job to come and breathe new life and to cast vision. And so after a number of years, God had blessed us with that. The student ministry at that church was growing at a rate and at a pace and of a tone and texture that I had never seen before in 20 years. You understand, I'm not saying this to tout my own horn or even those of my volunteers, but to say that God was incredibly faithful. Something was happening. It was a successful youth ministry by any measure, be it spiritual measure or secular measure. That thing, that group, that growth was something to see. And yet behind the scenes, Sonia, my wife, she could tell that I wasn't happy. She could tell that something was off. She could tell that there was more frustration than there should be seeing that kind of growth from God. It seemed to me like the leadership and the student ministry didn't have the same goals. And again, you hear me very clearly, I'm not in any way casting blame. I'm not in any way throwing shade. But the more the student ministry grew, the more the friction grew. And this was, there were personality frictions, and something started to unravel behind the scenes. And so, one day, it just so happened that Pastor Eddie called my boss, and said, hey, Pathways is in our own youth pastor search, and we understand your youth pastor's been there for a while and understands multiculturalism and has been through a lot of searches before. Would you mind if we asked him to consult on the grounds that we promise not in any way to offer him anything? It is just going to be a free consultation. And my boss said, yeah, sure, borrow him. And so it just so happened that when I visited that search team, and in my mind, I can see all the faces in that room. It just so happened that something clicked. And that was the most life-giving conversation I had had in a very long time. I confess, I went home troubled. I went home disturbed because I had made a promise to my church, and yet I was experiencing longing. And it felt a little bit unfaithful. I didn't know how else to describe that. It just so happened that right around that time, the relationships I was speaking of behind the scenes, they started to unravel and deteriorate. And I didn't know it at the time. This was explained to me after the fact in a meeting where I got fired. And so Sonia and I are at home and we're grieving and we're angry and all the emotions you get from leaving beloved students and et cetera, not understanding what was going on and just being in our deep, hard place, crying out, why and what for and why this and I'm done and all these things you yell at God when you're in that place. But it just so happened that I guess Pastor Eddie and that search team were feeling the same things I were feeling. And unbeknownst to me, and Eddie didn't know this either, he reached out to my boss and said, so I know we made an agreement, but would it be okay with you if we approached Jonathan just to see if there was a possibility? And it just so happened that when Eddie made that request, I was fired the day before that. Maybe it was 2 days. It was really close. And then it just so happened that in those conversations with Pastor Eddie and that search team and as Pathways, it just so happened that things started to click. It just happened that we matched up. It just happened that vision and mission and goals and strategies and personalities in this wonderful staff team that I had never known such love among a staff team. The churches I had been a part to, they were corporate structure, they were business, they were functional, high active teams. And this team sat together for lunch every day. I got rebuked several times by that one and by other people on the staff. They would peek their head in my office, "Jonathan, it's time to eat. And we eat together." It's like, I got things to do. It just so happened that things meshed. And as Sonia and I looked back in our devotions, and as we traced all the different pieces, things that we could know and things that we couldn't know, it was so clear. There were so many coincidences going on. And for those of us who are Christ followers, we know that that phrase is horribly inaccurate. That in God's vocabulary, the word coincidence doesn't exist. In those devotions, we could see God moving actively in real ways without us knowing to prepare us for benefit, huge benefit. I have never been as comfortable or as blessed on a church staff, among a church. So excited for what Pathways is about to become and do. So excited for where Pathways had been and has grown into. And we are on the precipice of big things happening. It just so happens. No. And that is a lot of what Deuteronomy 11 is about. To pray with me. We are not of the culture anymore, God, of oral tradition. I have not sat at the feet of my elders and listened for hours to stories upon stories. I don't even know the names of the generations before my grandfather. I have to do one of those genetic tests to figure out who my ancestors were. I'm a poor student of history too, God. I went to seminary and I studied church history, and yet when I sit with Pastor Eddie and he rattles off all these dates and all these happenstance and all these peoples and all these, it's just like the man has sat in history and marveled at your movements in history, and I look forward to that richness, but I don't do it yet. We are a forgetful people, God. We are short-memoried. I like to pride myself on being a tech kind of guy. I look to the forward. I think of myself as a futurist. I look only forward. I don't look back. And I lose so much because I don't see your hand when I look back. Father, would you continue to promise us that you will be as faithful to us in our future as you have been in our past? And would you scream, yell, knock it upside my head that that is who you are and what you have been doing, and that you deserve my praise and worship? We wish to follow you on proof, God. Yes, on faith in the future, but on proof, too, that you have been faithful. And all the people of God said. Deuteronomy 11 starts, as so many of the Deuteronomy passages do, with the phrases that something, I mean, it's not these exact words, but the sentiment that Moses, and every chapter of Deuteronomy starts with, remember and obey. Remember and obey. If you've been listening to Pastor Eddie, maybe this is the first time you've joined us. The entire book of Deuteronomy is about remember. And then obey. It's not difficult. Moses is old. He's about to go up on the mountains to pretty much die. And so this is his last message. This book is his desperate plea to his people. Here's how you go forward without me. Here's what the next step is. You have to remember. And then you have to obey. And so it starts in verse 1. Love the Lord your God and keep his requirements, his decrees, his laws, and his commands always. And by chapter 11, that's a pretty familiar opening for Deuteronomy chapters. But what's a little bit different is he throws in a little phrase he hasn't usually addressed. And he says, remember today, my people, that your children were not the ones. They were not the ones who saw. They did not experience the discipline of the Lord our God, his majesty, his mighty hand, his outstretched arm, the signs he performed and the things he did. They weren't there. You were. And so, people of God, you have to remember so that you respond in gratefulness, which then leads to grateful obedience. My father, having grown up in China, and man, I wish I knew more about that. I don't even know where in China. I think I know the name of the city, but my father was the kind of man who expected obedience. When he told his children to do something, there was no answering why. I did not get to challenge it. I did not get to question it. It was expected to be done. And somehow in the Asian culture, I guess that is supposed to breed respect. The family is more important than the individual. The group is more important than the individual. Play your part. Don't move out of your lane. Just obey. And I fear that that is somehow the message that we have inadvertently spoken to the generations today. How many of my graduating middle schoolers, how many of my graduating high schoolers, how many of my current college students and our emerging adults would look back on their youth group years, would look back on what the church says, and it's just do these things and don't do those things. Just obey. Oh, and here's the pizza party too. Every once in a while we'll get a lock-in, have some pizza party, but don't do those things and do those things. And I know it's true because I've asked, and that's what my students have said. And I said, weren't you listening? We taught you so many other things. But for some reason, that's all they hear. I mean, how did we? I mean, yes, they get to make their own decisions and they are at fault for the wrongness that they hold and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I wonder if we made it hard. Let me ask you a question. If I asked you to tell a story from this past month only, if you had a young person sitting in front of you, could you tell them a story right now from the past month of God active in your life? Too many coincidences happening. Could you do it? If I asked us as a church, if we had a group of little ones sitting here, could we tell them a Pathways story from this month of how God is active in our church body such that this is why we exist, because he's present, and we know he's present because this happened just this month? Look at the hand of God. That's not cool. I mean, there's no way that could have just magically happened by coincidence. There had to be something more. There had to be God there, and that's why we worship him. Could we do that? I'm not trying to make us feel bad, although that, as an Asian man, that's kind of my first default, and I apologize for that. I'm trying to say that these stories exist Remember that movie, The Matrix? I wish that stupid thing weren't rated R. I don't know why. It's such a great movie for explaining the sovereignty of God. There's one reality you live on, and there's a whole other reality going on at the same time. And if you had but the key, if you had but the eyesight to see this other reality going on at the same time, you could live in both. God is present in our lives in ways where we can tell stories. I'm afraid that we're not remembering. And the only thing coming across is obey. Down in verse 18, God understands his children, understands that they're gonna need some help. If I've told them to remember and obey for 11 chapters, they probably need a little help. I'm going to give them some object lessons. So here's what you do. My people, you should tie these things on your hands and bind them on your forehead and cover your head and do all these different things and have everywhere in every room of your house, you should put these things up where you touch them, whether you go into the room, when you leave the room, touch these things to remind you of what I've been doing in your life. And our Jewish brothers and sisters have these object lessons in their home. You know what? Let me read you the verse. It goes like this. Verse 18, fix these words of mine in your hearts and minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Teach them to your children, talking about them. Well, I don't know, how about when you sit at home? And what about also when you're walking along the road? And you might as well tell them these things and teach them these things when you lie down and, while we're at it, when you wake up. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. I found a little video to help us understand this, because we don't do this, but some of our Jewish brothers and sisters do, so.
A mezuzah is a parchment scroll on which the Shema, the biblical passage declaring the oneness of God, is handwritten by an expert scribe. The Torah commands us to affix the mezuzah to every doorpost of our home as a constant reminder of our belief in God and His watchful care and protection over us. But why every door? Each room in our home has a specific purpose, houses certain activities, inspires particular moods or thoughts. Our inner selves, too, are comprised of many seemingly disconnected roles, responsibilities, emotions, even identities. We may sense a resulting feeling of fragmentation, a lack of direction and focus, which can drain our energy and zest for life. The mezuzah reminds us that there is, in fact, a unifying force that binds together all of the disparate parts of our lives. That unifying force is our mission as Jews to reveal God's oneness in the world. As we traverse the thresholds of our lives, be they physical, intellectual, or emotional, we remind ourselves of the words of the Shema, "The Lord is our God. The Lord is one." By infusing a godly awareness into everything we do, and by using our God-given tools to make the world a brighter, kinder, more godly place, we unite the fragments of our lives and of the world under the cosmic divine calling of Shema Yisrael.
I really hope that video is accurate. I'm not obviously Jewish, and so I found it online, and I hope it's accurate. And if you have more accurate knowledge about the Jewish culture, I can hear my friend Audrey just shaking her head at me. But the point of that was how frequently and how in so many ways they have built into their daily life remembering who God is and why they worship Him. The obedience that comes from grateful response does not feel like obedience. Maybe there will come a day. Maybe there will come a day when I become so selfish and so self-centered that Sonia asks me to cook dinner. That will feel like a chore beyond comprehension. And I'm not doing that for you, and make it yourself. But being married says I should submit myself, so I'm just going to do this. I'm going to grit my teeth, and I'm not going to put extra salt in it. And yeah. I hope not. I hope that for all of my days, my thoughts are filled with her, such that I anticipate and even cook a dinner for her just because. Honey, if you're watching this, I'm not promising that. I'm just saying it's a sermon illustration. It's just, it fits in the message, okay? The student ministry here at Pathways, Three Strands, has been on a journey for a couple of years, and we've kind of adopted this theme that it's an unofficial theme, and it's God in our everyday, because we started to feel like maybe our students couldn't see him in their everyday. And how do we teach that? And how do we reveal that? And how do we help them live in such a way that they develop those lenses so that they can see him, so that their stories among their friends have way too many coincidences and it just becomes a God conversation? I mean, I could do a whole youth ministry segment right here. But the short version is this. I want to say this carefully. It's not every student, but I think as a generation. I think our students take advantage of living in America as the blessing of God. And that if the blessings in our lives of being American look very similar to my Mormon neighbor and to my Muslim neighbor, then why do I have to do these obedience things if the blessing is just here all the time and it doesn't matter whether you're Christian or not? I think our students can't see God's hand. I think the V team and I need to tell them more stories from our personal lives. I think we need to have more one-on-ones with students to know more about their life so that we can help them see. Dude, are you saying that just coincidentally happened, or do you think maybe there's a divine being who orchestrated that whole thing? I think we need to come alongside you parents to help you develop your own stories so that you can remember for yourself and teach them to your family. And this is why we honor and respect and obey God, because we have blessing from God. Because when you read the rest of this chapter, it's not just the roses of remember and obey. God goes so far as to say, because if you don't, there are curses coming. And if you read the last chapters of Deuteronomy, those curses are real and scary. It's as if God were trying to throw these gigantic landmines on this path and saying, whatever you do, don't go this way. There is death and destruction and horribleness over here. So go this way, because there is blessing and there is me. And reward upon reward upon reward. And if we don't highlight God's blessings, and if we let them just think that being in wealthy America is the blessing, I think we lose them. It's hard to blame them. And so in this Easter season, this is what I hated as a single person. I hated messages that felt like they were directed at families. But this passage, remind you, is not to families. There's no word in here that says parents. When Moses is talking, he's talking to the entire nation. So if you are single or maybe you don't have kids, that still applies. Do you have someone younger than you in faith, maybe? Maybe someone who's not in the faith, with whom you are sharing your stories. Not in a weird way, like with a sign on the corner of the street, but as you share of your life. Are you working in these coincidences so that maybe the transition is, well, actually, I don't actually think it's a coincidence. I follow Jesus Christ. I'm afraid that the generations today are trying to produce obedience without the gratefulness. And that's not the sequence that God outlines in Deuteronomy. So what would happen? What would happen if we became a church of storytellers? What would happen if this intergenerationality that we're talking about became real? Not just multi-generations, not just generations sitting in the sanctuary as we are, but actually interacting. When you visit, when we're able to visit in person again, and when you're here with us in Pathways, I'm going to give you fair warning, the first few times it happened, it freaked me out. When Pathways stands up and greets each other, it's not the 5-second turn and wave at your neighbor and then giving back the sermon again. When Pathways greets each other, it's a 5-minute occasion where people walk across the aisle, they talk to each other, they wave at different people. Some people are engaged in deep discussion. I'm going to go back to assigning us. Hey, older people, not allowed to talk to anyone in your generation. Younger people, this Sunday we're sitting scattered. Younger people, get on every team you can. I will bribe you with candy and pizza, whatever I need to do to get you interacting with someone else to hear their stories and so that you can be seen and known as well. What would happen if we became a church of storytellers? What would happen if every student and child had 3 or 4 stories they could recall that proved God's existence in someone's life? What would happen if that generation became hungry and thirsty for their own stories? If they could see the richness of our lives and want that. It's as if I had, yell out some desserts. 10 seconds, yell out some desserts. What's your favorite dessert? Cheesecake, pumpkin pie, a donut, all these things. What if I had all these things right here and I was just eating them? And you had to sit there and you could not have any. Just watch me eat your cake and my donut. You might have some envy. In a good way, what if we were able to display that richness, that aliveness in our faith? And they were like, well, that looked pretty cool. I sure do want to live my life that way. What if we properly understood that God's past faithfulness dictates his future faithfulness, and that his past faithfulness is meager compared to his future faithfulness? What if we understood that he was asking us into bigger things? What if we took on more challenges? What if we strove to become even more beneficial to our neighbors, to our community? And things got big. We had to call in other organizations and other people, and we had to call in friends to help because the challenge was just too big, because if God doesn't show up, really bad things are going to happen. And then they see this magnetic thing. They start hearing stories. And all of a sudden, they start to hunger for their own stories. There must be more. because there is more. This is not one of those do more, try harder sermons. This is God is already waiting and available and active and is wants to reveal it to us if we would but put on those glasses, on those lenses, if we would but spend time in the Bible for like, well, I wonder what could happen. Maybe I should read some of these stories to see how God's faithfulness plays out. Well, I wonder if I could get into a small group or a class or a community so that I could have mutual support, so that as I take my baby steps, they're celebrating with me, so that I can hear more stories. What if I refused to be unknown in this church? What if I refused to be polite and plastic and not vulnerable? When you go through hardship, do you know that the church is praying for you? We can't unless you tell us. When our children step out in faith, when our students risk something for God, do they know that the rest of us are cheering them on and waiting to hear their stories? What would happen if we remembered and responded in gratefulness and were blessed? Heavenly Father, I'm pretty sure there's a room in heaven, God, where there's just VHS tapes or DVDs going, something, where we can all look back at these stories and see them in real time. Every story of your scripture, I want to watch those tapes. I want to see it play out. And then I want to watch the tape of my life, God, and see you active where I did not notice. And I want to see all the times I responded, even just a little bit, littlest bit of obedience, and you took it and magnified it and blessed someone else like crazy, and I wasn't even aware of it. God, would you make us that kind of church where the actions we take, the steps we take, are just grateful obedience, and you magnify them 1,000-fold to bless others in our lives, in our circles, in our families. Father, would you make us a church that teaches the generations and the next generations of your stories in our lives? Would you give us that sight beyond sight to see your hand move? Would you give us that small smile of secret proof, God, when someone says the word coincidence, and that small smile I'll give says, God, I know that's you. There's no such thing. We remember, God. We will hear, God, and we will obey. And all the people of God said, amen.